From the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
It is Friday, November 8th, 2019. You're listening to The Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Huckabee, back in the United States of America. It feels good to be home, everybody. Joining with me here stateside out there in Loveland, Virginia, is our very own Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
Down there in Orlando, Florida, we got John David Harris. Hey, JD.
Greetings.
Right next to JD, keeping an eye on him, in for Chandler today, our interim producer, our producer 2.0, Clark Flippo's in the house today.
Hey, guys.
Some people call him the new improved Chandler, but we'll leave that up to you.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about him. We don't need to hurt Chandler.
Indistinguishable sometimes.
He's not listening.
Yeah. And joining us from Austin, Texas, we are pleased to welcome back to the Relevant Podcast, Jamie Ivey. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me
back.
How
are you doing?
You know, I've been really well. I've been busy. I had a huge project that I worked on for the whole month of October, and it's done. And so now I am ready for the holidays. Isn't that fun to say? Like, we're ready for the holidays and just
doing
life.
Yeah, it's November.
Can you reveal what this project is, or is it under wraps? Because
secret.
That sounds very cool, and it
you
sounds
very
like
vague.
Like, I can't tell if it's like a book project or something, or if you've been
crafting a
time machine or something. What is this project?
Doesn't it sound vague? I kind of feel super cool when I say I just had this big project. You guys, like, don't worry about it; it's behind me. All is well. No, I wrote a book, and I knew about this book since January of this year, and it was due at the end of October, and so I spent the entire month of October working really, really hard on it.
Nice. I love how it's very humble of you to say, you know, reveal it was a book instead of leading out with, I've been finishing a book.
Can I tell you guys something funny about this whole project, quote unquote? I worked so hard on it in October. I am not kidding when I tell you what I'm about to tell you. I gave myself tennis elbow. My elbow was hurting so bad.
Tennis?
Listen. I'm not kidding, and I feel like I just need to let everyone know. If you're my friend in real life, you know I cannot stop complaining about my tennis elbow because I don't play tennis. I've never played tennis a day in my life, but I went to the doctor. I'm like, my elbow hurts so bad, like so bad. He said, have you been doing like a certain motion for a lot of hours recently? And I was like, yes, I've been working on a super big secret project on my computer. And he said, yes, you gave yourself tennis elbow. So I have tennis elbow, you guys.
Wow.
Well, that sounds very cool. You sound like an athlete.
Yeah,
I didn't know we had a jock on the podcast today.
I was going to say, at least it's like it's cool to tell people we got tennis elbow because you're like, man, you must be really out there walloping those serves.
You and Serena.
One time I was playing.
Right. Instead, I'm like just closed off in my tiny house, you know, not leaving and just drinking coffee by the gallons.
Do you get one of those cool like sports tape things that they wear?
It's like the volleyball player.
I don't know what they're called.
No.
I'm not much of a tennis player myself.
How would I go in there and they'd ask me, okay, so have you been playing tennis or what are you doing? And I'm like, no, just a big super secret project in my office. I'm typing a lot. Yeah.
You were building a time machine by hand, weren't you? That's what they're going to say.
Right.
I one time hurt my knee playing basketball and I went to the doctor because I was in so much knee pain. And he's like, all right, well, we've diagnosed it. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, this is a tough sports injury. I'll tell all my friends and my family, this is why I'm limping around. And they're like, you have housemaid's knee. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, listen, there's like, this isn't shaming housemaids. It's work just like all other kinds of work. But as someone who is fashioning himself like, you know, an athletic injury, it was pretty humiliating to have housemaid's knee and to tell my like intramural team, hey guys, I'm out tonight. Bad case of the housemaid's knee.
So
at least you got tennis elbow because that sounds really
hilarious.
Cool.
Right, that's like the opposite problem.
Yeah. Jamie, can I ask a book writing question?
Okay, Jamie? Go for it.
So I've been privileged in this work to know a lot of authors. So we talk to a lot of authors. My wife's working on a book. She's getting her master's in creative fiction. And one thing that I feel like a lot of people who are authors, when they tell their people they're working on a book, they get other people who say, oh, I actually am also working on a book. And you're like, oh, that's cool. What's it about? And you're like, well, it's it's all in my head right now. Or so they say something to the effect of like, so they're not working on a book. They at one point had like an elevator pitch for the book. And that is like their version of like relating to your like project that you just finished is the fact that they like had this idea one time. Can you relate to this? Is this something that, that you've experienced as an author?
Yes. And now my follow-up question will always be, you are not working on a book until you have tennis elbow. That's all I got to say.
Oh,
that is the test right
have
there.
You, how are your you elbows? That's all I want to know. Sports injury while writing
yes,
the book.
Yes.
Are you working so hard on a book that you had to go to the doctor for
yes,
it?
Because
that
is yes.
how, that's suffering actually, for the art. Yeah. Yeah. Jamie, you also, you just got back from a trip to down to the border there, right? To the Texas-Mexico border.
I did. I was super honored to be invited to go. I had a woman on my podcast. Her name's Tess Clark, and okay. She has her hands in a lot of different organizations, but she invited me on this trip, and it's with an organization called Welcome. And it is really this community of Christian women who just want to kind of engage and learn more. And the act of hospitality towards the immigrant, the migrant, the asylum seeker, all of the things. And so I flew down to El Paso. We drove over to Juarez for the day and oh, wow. got to meet with a man who had journeyed all the way from Guatemala by himself. He left his family because of violence. And so it was a really, really good trip. I'll tell you this. I thought I would go down to that trip and meet with, we also met with immigration people. We met with Border Patrol. We did all these things and had conversations. And I thought I would come back with having like some clear cut answers. And I came back with 8 million more questions. So it's just such a complex issue. But I was happy to see with my own eyes, people who were really working hands and feet on the ground all the time for these people.
Yeah. When you had a chance to meet these individuals that were, you know, risking a lot to come to the United States, what were your just kind of impression of their like situation that a lot of them found? Because I feel like, you know, everything we kind of read in the news, it feels so distant and like kind of foreign, like we don't really understand the problem, but kind of interacting with people who have risk more than most people in this country could probably ever realize to be able to be here. What was your impression of just kind of meeting those individuals?
You know, my first impression was I can't imagine what this man has been to choose to leave his family because if his life was in danger, then their life was in danger. And to come to a country where he was hopeful would give him another chance and a better life. And then he could take care of his family in the right way. And as a mom, I just could not even wrap my brain around that. But meeting him and talking to him and seeing him tell us his story through tears. I mean, nobody wants to leave their family. And I'll tell you this real quick. I was having a conversation with someone recently and they said, and this could be a long conversation, you guys, but they said they had adopted a child a couple of years ago and they were saying how hard it was to go through immigration to get their children home. And I have adopted children. I know that it is a long and difficult and it should be process to bring kids from another country home to your family. So he said, I had to work so hard at that. It's unfair that these people just think they can walk over and take all of our resources. And I had to take a deep breath. And then I had to say, that is such false news that you're hearing. Like, that is not the reality. There are people who are taking the right steps, but right now we're not giving them those steps. And so that's what I left with, is that there is a narrative that we can believe that people are just walking over saying, hey, we just want all your stuff. But then you go down there and you're like, well, that's not really the true narrative. Yeah, sure, that does happen. You know, it's like saying, you know, everyone is this because they're that. And that's just not true. So that's what my eyes was just really open to. It's a much bigger conversation. And to be following, like, you know, following this group on Instagram and Facebook where they're giving you some real tangible things of what are happening has changed my worldview.
Do you remember offhand the name of this this organization on Instagram?
Yeah, where it's called Welcome, but their Instagram handle is Christ-like Welcome. But they're new to Instagram, but Instagram's my fave. But they have a really huge community over on Facebook. And so, and their whole hope is literally just to reach out to women in evangelical circles and just help them see things a little bit different.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And you interviewed one of these individuals.
Yeah,
over
Tess
on
Clark
the
has been on my
podcast.
Show. Yes, and it was a phenomenal interview. I highly recommend it on this issue.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait to go. I can't wait to go listen to it. Thanks for sharing about that, and thanks for doing that too. It's just cool that people go to like put in the actual work to, because we can all blab about our opinions on this thing, But until you're down there for any length of time, it's really hard to know what you're saying that's legit. And so I'm glad that we have somebody who's like, you know, you're a trusted source. I believe that you're, I don't think you're trying to pull the wool over my eyes or push some sort of narrative. So I appreciate hearing from people who've been able to go down there and can share some of their experiences.
Jamie, there's one other thing I know there's a lot to get to in today's show, but something we briefly mentioned before.
I know where this is going.
When you and I were talking, you saw today that I'm proudly wearing the hat of the Washington Nationals baseball team, which I wear frequently. They just won the World Series and they beat a team not too far from you, the Houston Astros. To be fair, the Astros, they've won before and they're a very worthy team. And I'm not trying to gloat by wearing this hat, but our guest later on the show is Mark Batterson, who's the pastor of National Community Church. He's got a new book called Double Blessing, but he's also famously, he wrote the book, The Circle Maker, about walking in circles and in closing places in circles. And JD has a theory. And his theory is that the reason we beat the Astros is because maybe Mark Batterson was praying circles around those stadiums.
I just don't think
circle making, because really baseball, if you're doing it well, there's a lot of circle making. You're basically just running in circles on the field. Maybe the Nats are just more better prayer warriors than the Astros.
I see. Well, I will say this. If I wasn't an Astros fan, I would have been cheering for the Nationals because just congratulations. What a fun game.
What a crazy
World Series.
What a humble reaction.
That's
a very humble, what a humble reaction.
I am an Astros fan. I grew up in Houston watching, Craig Biggio days. And so, listen, guys, let me tell you the truth. I'm only a baseball fan come October, because who in their right mind has time to watch baseball from April to October?
Nope.
Okay.
Nobody.
Okay. Nope. Okay. Well, okay. Listen, Jamie, some of us keep it on in the background. We're not just losers. We do. It's all. I'm doing other things. Okay. I might not be writing a book to the degree that I'm incurring sports injuries, but it's all in the background. Okay. All year. All year. I know I'm
got
a loser.
Got it.
I get it.
Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you. It's I will be gloating about this for a long time. Offline, me and Mark Batterson talk for quite a bit about this. He's very excited too, and I appreciate his work praying that team up, because obviously we had God on our side. No shame to the Astros, but it was pretty miraculous. That
it's
game
basically
seven,
an
so.
Angels in the outfield type scenario.
Yeah. Well, we are, like Jesse said, we are going to be joined later today by the National Community Church pastor and author of the new book, Double Blessing, Mark Batterson. Jesse talked to him. We're going to be hearing a little bit about that book. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're doing the hot list. You're listening to Just Like You by the Emotional Oranges. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard For the First Time by Best Coast. Jesse, what do you feel like the Best Coast is in the United States?
I'm biased because I live minutes. I live like a mile and a half from the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic Ocean. But I'm going to say Florida's Redneck Riviera down there in the Emerald Coast. You get what? And here's why. They don't care down there. like I guess it's your definition of best. But you could drive a golf cart on the beach and go swimming in jeans and no one's thinking twice. There's no rules down that stretch of the world.
It's weird. It's weird.
Like out here, you know, I can't get away with that. Not in California. Not, you know, Jamie, you have some beaches not too far from you, right?
And let me tell you, you can probably get away with that down there, just to be honest.
I was gonna say, those are kind of, it's kind of one big beach down there on the Gulf.
It is.
Texas to Alabama to Florida.
Yeah.
The only place, I feel like the West Coast does have more rules. You couldn't wear jeans swimming. Like, people would think you were, they'd lock you up. They'd throw you in one of those weird jails.
Yeah. Yeah. The great thing about the Gulf Coast, all down there, maybe Jamie, you can confirm this because most of my experience down there has been out on the panhandle, but I'd assume it stretches all the way around. There are literally, it's just lawless. Like, you feel like if driving down the beach, a bunch of those Mad Max trucks came flying down. And for some reason, law enforcement has just ignored open container laws. That's basically the Gulf Coast, and that's why I love it. It's a libertarian paradise down there.
Totally, you do it. You just be you down there on that coast. No one cares.
Yeah, I grew up on the Florida Gulf Coast and like in the Central Florida Gulf Coast area, and it's not an uncommon thing to just see a car pulled off to the side of the road
right.
with people just swimming in the ocean or the Gulf. It's like you're just driving because they build the roads like right up against the coastline, so it's these pretty scenic drives, except for the like six minivans pulled up with their coolers and boom boxes as they are splashing away in the dirty like intercoastal waters.
I've never seen as much denim on the beach as I have when I'm on a golf. When I'm on the Gulf Coast, and I don't mind it at all. It's like they're just next level. They're like, why do we even change clothes? Just jumping in the jeans, just go for a little dip. Yeah. You know, it's hot down there. So there we go.
Well, it's time for our weekly look back at the stories that define the week. It's time for.
It's the hot list. The hot list. It's sizzling.
Coming in at number five this week, I'm a little surprised because I really thought this story would hit number one. Jesse, you threw these together. I want to hear a little bit about your rankings later because this story really got my imagination.
Very controversial.
Got my imagination humming. I want the cinematic adaptation of this story stat. Coming to number five, Woody Harrelson talked about writing sermons with Mike Pence and how he lost his faith over on Mark Maron. Okay, so.
Wait, Woody Harrelson, the actor?
This story goes places that no other podcast could cover
This is what the Relevant podcast brings: weird gems from pop culture, like Woody Harrelson and Mike Pence hanging in a dorm room as teenagers writing sermons.
College boys, college boys. All right, so here's what happened. So Woody Harrelson, great actor. Love yeah. Woody. Oscar nominated? I don't know. Sure. He should be. Oscar nominated in our hearts. Was a guest on Mark Maron's WTF podcast, and he opened up about his days as a devout Christian college student. While a student at Hanover College, Woody Harrelson would regularly host Bible studies and even began preaching at the age of 17. In fact, one of his early mentors who would help him write sermons was now Vice President Mike Pence. Harrelson also opened up a little bit about how questions about the Bible actually led him away from faith. Here's a clip of that conversation.
People trying to get me to become a minister.
Oh,
and
really?
I was considering it.
Who are those people?
Someone from my church.
Oh, you know, they knew you had charisma.
The minister.
They knew you could hold the audience. They're like, we need this guy.
I did a sermon when I was 17. And then I did another one when I was at Hanover College. And in fact, this is kind of bizarre, but Mike Pence was 2 years older at the same school at Hanover. And he was the guy who kind of, led me through it.
Oh, really?
He
mentored you through your sermon?
Mentored me through it.
Mike Pence did.
Mike Pence.
Frightening vice president. Was he frightening then?
No, not at all.
Just a guy?
We weren't buddies or anything.
Right.
But, he was very religious.
Yeah.
And,
he was. So that's...
And he was the guy who kind of headed that. It was kind of, I don't know, like for students wanting to do religious things.
Right, the really Christian club.
Very Christian folks there.
Yeah.
And, but then, you know, the more I studied theology, the more I realized how man-made the Bible was, you know.
Sure.
And it was, it became very obvious.
Jamie, you sounded particularly surprised that Woody Harrelson's
surprised.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about Woody Harrelson in general first?
I mean, I like him as an actor, but he's kind of this, I think he brings like a creepiness to his maybe acting. Yeah. I don't know if that's his real life.
Yeah, he does.
And I don't mean to talk bad about Woody Harrelson, but I was thinking when he was talking, I could never imagine listening to him as a pastor.
Yeah.
I mean, have you gone that route?
He's kind of got that slow drawl, too.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. His sermons would take a long time. Yeah. Because he'd be talking so slowly. He'd really
but, good. Jamie, he's not from Texas, but I know I for some reason I associate him with like Austin. Is he around there a lot?
Oh, not that I know of, but maybe. Come on down, Woody. We'll take you here in Austin. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I like him as an actor, but I could not. I've never even heard any of this about him. So
he opened up about it. The first time this popped on our radar, Jesse, was last year when he was on Kimmel, right? Yeah, he talked a little bit about knowing Pence.
Yeah.
And that the two of them, he said, he's never said that they were like close friends, but he's expressed some level of like, he said he liked the guy at the time that he had a good reputation around college.
What's odd to me is like, and this is why I find this story so delightful. And so, and like, listen, you know, his comments about, you know, his understanding of the Bible aside, you know, the friendship between Woody Harrelson and Mike Pence, not just friendship, but they were literally writing sermons together as college students. The other reason why this is so funny to me is because, like, Mike Pence, politics aside, okay, anyone can, you know, I'm not making a comment about his political leanings, but he's arguably one of the squarest dudes in Washington. Like, one of the dudes who are like, if I had to pick everyone in politics right now, who's the least likely to hang out with Woody Harrelson, who is like a creepy
libertine, notable lover of the grass. Like, he's very
substances
open.
Of all kinds.
Very, very, big fan.
I would love to see like a modern day Odd Couple of Woody Harrelson and Mike Pence as roommates or something. Jamie, is that something you would tune into? Because I love the idea of these guys hanging out.
Big Brother, like it's a Big Brother episode, and then we have the 24-hour footage, like you get on Showtime. Yeah, that I would watch.
Oh, totally. I would live stream that all day. Just in there, I have a TV in my house dedicated to hanging out with Woody and Mike Pence as they kick around theology ideas. So,
My gosh.
What I would really like is for, you know, I know obviously things have, I would like for Woody Harrelson, I'd like to hear a sermon from him today. He says he's still a little religious. I'd like to hear his sermon. I'd give him 30 minutes. Come on the podcast, Woody. My one condition for you to deliver this sermon is that you have to be mentored through the process by Mike Pence.
He did a scripture reading at the beginning of a killer song on their last album.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
And I remember thinking like, oh, that's an odd choice, but it sounded right. Like it felt right in the moment in the song. You're like, okay, cool. Yeah. Woody, that's weird.
But like, it seems like Woody, he does have a lot of familiarity with Pence? The actual.
No, Woody Harrelson.
Woody. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he did it. Yeah. No, the killer's not Mike Pence.
I was wondering how that worked out.
Yeah.
I would listen to that too. I would listen to a Mike Pence killers collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally fair. Yeah. Coming in number four this week, Pixar's new film. We'll look at the idea of the human soul. So this is interesting. This week, Pixar released a look at their new film, and this one has an interesting supernatural twist. It looks at the idea of the human soul and what happens when we die. Soul stars Jamie Foxx as a jazz musician who dies the day he gets his big break and then meets another soul in the afterlife, voiced by Tina Fey. The film's director, Pixar executive Pete Docter, explained to Entertainment Weekly that he did a lot of religious research to make the film. He said, quote, "We talked to a lot of folks that represented religious traditions and cultural traditions and asked, what do you think a soul is? All of them said vaporous and ethereal and non-physical. We were like, great, how do we do this? We're used to toys, cars, things that are much more substantial and easily referenced. This was a huge challenge, but I gotta say, I think the team really put some cool stuff together that's really indicative of those words, but also relatable." I'm excited for this. And what I love when Pixar gets in kind of weird mode like this, when they throw caution to the wind, like with Inside Out and things like that, where they just abandon all like sensible idea of what you can use to tell a story. And like, how do we, let's illustrate something that can't be illustrated.
Yeah. Well, and that's like, it's an interesting twist for Pixar in general, because they've gone from like basically a studio that makes movies about anthropomorphic fish and cars and toys to these real existential movies. I mean, Coco was about the afterlife and death. You know, like you said, Inside Out was about the interior life of children and emotional and mental health. And now you have one that isn't just doesn't just seem to be about the soul, but seems to be about religious ideas about what makes people people. It just seems like an interesting turn for the studio, especially as they seem open to different religious ideas as they're tackling, you know, this concept.
I think this is always hard for me when I think about little kids watching movies about someone dying. Because Coco was beautiful and I loved it and I had big kids and they were fine. I sat next to a dad who had his two daughters. They had to have been like 3 and 5. One of them, you guys, bawled through the entire movie. Sure. And the dad just like kept consoling her. And I almost tapped him on the shoulder and said, I think you should just leave. But whatever, you parent your kids however you want. But I think sometimes these are hard for parents with little kids to watch. And that's who they're for. But we as adults, we can appreciate it and see how beautiful it is.
Yeah, that's my question. Not concern. It's not that deep. But it's more like who are some of these Pixar movies for? And I think the beautiful thing about a lot of Pixar is that it works across an entire spectrum of the family, right? But with a movie like this one in particular, you have this scenario where, like, my kids, I have a 5-year-old and then a 7-month-old. So 7-month-old's not going to care and know what's going on. But my 5-year-old will latch onto the biggest idea that he's able to latch onto. And so for a movie like this, I'm not sure if he will get past the moment of Jamie Foxx's character falling down the sewer hole and then showing up as like a glowing blue orb. Like, I don't, it'll just be like,
is that how he dies?
What? in the trailer.
A manhole accident.
Okay, let me tell you something. I am going to be traumatized from this movie if that's how he dies. I refuse to walk on anything that could fall through the ground. And this right here, this solidifies all of my fears.
Yeah, and listen, and Jamie, that's a legit fear. You incurred a serious arm injury writing a book. I would not trust your luck just hopping on manhole covers.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Now I can't see this movie now.
It's pretty. It was like a fun. It's a fun like jazz movie, and you're watching the trailer like, okay, cool. Pixar's doing a little like underground jazz movie, cool. And then all of a sudden, he's like, I got my big shot. Woo!
But it's like it's such a weird tradition for like Disney and Pixar to just murder a parent early in the year. Bambi's mom straight up gets shot.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is that this is not new. Explore the afterlife, a little bit new territory for Pixar, maybe, but killing people off, that's as old as Disney itself. Nobody survives a Disney movie.
I would like to say, just put out a blanket warning statement to every Enneagram 6, this might be a difficult movie to watch.
A hard 6 warning on this one.
PG warning on this one.
Guide movie, like websites or whatever, and everything else, it's like, oh yeah, acceptable, like manhole cover, like fears, like straight up 10 out of 10, be afraid.
Yes.
Yeah, caution. Yeah.
Coming to number 3, Shia LaBeouf thanked the police officers who arrested him back in 2017. So back in 2017, our man Shia was arrested in Savannah, Georgia for public drunkenness. TMZ later released a video of his profane racist meltdown while in custody. One of the arresting officers was black. But according to LaBeouf, the incident led to him taking sobriety seriously and seeking help for his addiction issues. Last year, he opened up about the incident, telling Esquire, quote, what went on in Georgia was mortifying. White privilege and desperation and disaster. It came from a place of self-centered delusion. It was me trying to absolve myself of guilt for getting arrested. This weekend at the Hollywood Film Awards, he surprised the audience by thanking the officers who arrested him while accepting an award for his new film, Honey Boy, which is based on his life as a child star. He said, quote, I want to thank the police officer who arrested me in Georgia for changing my life, and my therapist and my sponsor for saving my life. He also thanked his parents for giving me life. LaBeouf has been vocal about his struggles as a young actor and the incident in Georgia, which happened when he was shooting The Peanut Butter Falcon, which also stars Zachary Gottsagen, an actor with Down syndrome. He told Esquire that when Gottsagen found out about the arrest, he confronted LaBeouf. He told him, quote, you're already famous. This is my chance and you're ruining it. LaBeouf said, quote, "To hear him say that he was disappointed in me probably changed the course of my life. Zach can't not shoot straight, and bless him for it, because in that moment, I needed a straight shooter who I couldn't argue with." This is a quote from the Esquire piece in 2018. He says, "Their conversation continued on set. We were getting ready to do a scene, and Zach said, 'Do you believe in God?' And I thought, 'No effing way. Are you about to explain God to me, Zach?' LaBeouf tries to keep it together. His voice jumps an octave. Zach said, 'Even if he's not real, what does it hurt?' LaBeouf later says, 'I don't believe in God, but suggests that the conversation did possibly change the way he thinks about God.' He's, quote, 'But did I see God? Did I hear God? Through Zach, yeah. He met me with love, and at the time, love was truth. And he didn't pull punches, and I'm grateful, not even on some cheese ball trying to sell a movie in real life.'"
Hmm.
So that's, he's a really, really his presence in a movie at this point, he's on that. He's one of like two former child stars who now have really used their fame, in my mind, really like use their fame to leverage themselves into just really interesting kind of weird projects. I'm at a place now where if Shia is in a movie, I'm interested in it, because the guy just picks interesting projects. He's got a real knack for lending his celebrity, which is at this point a very kind of chaotic energy level of celebrity, towards movies that could really use a little leg up in publicity. And he joins them. He's obviously had an extremely, he's had an extremely unusual and controversial public life. Lots of there's the meltdown, which was very well publicized, and we covered that as well. But his level of reckoning with that has seemed very honest and authentic in a way that a lot of celebrity apologies have not. And I really admire him for that.
Yeah. I did think his comments, and I think we talked about it before, about seeing God through someone, a fellow actor who's extending love and grace, even though he doesn't even know if he believes in God. I felt like that was kind of an interesting thing. And to use the platform to thank the police officer who bore the brunt of that meltdown, you know, I felt like it was an interesting thing. Jamie, are you a fan of any Shia LaBeouf movies?
Well, I did see Peanut Butter Falcon.
Did you like it?
And I loved it.
I thought it was great.
I loved it so much. And when you were reading that, Tyler, I was like, man, what a bold statement that his actor friend that was in the show with him said to him, wow, that was really, really bold of him to call him out. And I'm like, yeah, go boy. But I don't think I'm a fan, because the only other thing I can think of him is in Holes. And y'all, I know that was 20 years ago, maybe 15, 17. It was a long time ago, but I'm not a big Shia fan. I like that movie.
I'll say Fury. Fury was, I feel like Fury is an underrated movie. And we interviewed the director. I think it's David Ayers, right?
Ayers.
And he's a Christian, actually. And faith plays a big part of that role. Particularly, Shia LaBeouf's character is a devout Christian in that movie. But it's a World War II tank movie. If anyone's looking for a deep cut Shia role, Fury, co-starring Brad Pitt, is another good one to jump in on.
I never know how to say his name either. So yeah, I don't really talk about him much.
LaBeouf. LaBeouf.
I still think that there's an outtake from The Office, from the dinner party. This is how much an Office fan is. I regularly watch like the outtakes and deleted scenes and YouTube stuff. And there's a scene from the dinner party episode where Michael's doing like one of his talking heads. And he is asked, and he tells the camera, who would he invite to if he could have a dinner party with anyone in the world? And he mispronounces every name. But and Michael Scott, he's like, well, obviously, Barack Obama, Shia LaBeouf, and just and those are basically the two people coming to Michael Scott's dinner party. So that's the other question.
That's hilarious. Speaking of Michael Scott, have you guys listened to the new podcast with the Office Girls?
I have.
The Office Ladies? Okay. I like it. And then my son, I think I told you when I was on here before, my son was watching them all. He finished it. So now we're listening to the podcast together and going back and watching it from the beginning again.
You know what's funny is I started listening to it's called The Office Girls, The Office Gals or something like that, but it's
Office Ladies.
Yeah, it's Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, who play Pam and Angela, and they start from the beginning, and they're watching every episode doing sort of recaps and facts. It made me start back at season one. And Jamie, I'm assuming you've done the same thing. Is it not disorienting how different Michael looks during season one?
It's so funny. I am so loving just hearing the behind the scenes of how they filmed this episode before this one, yeah. and they had 6 months off, and the things that Angela picks up from the show. I'm if you're an Office fan, go listen to Office Ladies.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, awesome. All right, coming in at number two this week, Lecrae opened up about his decision to join the Dove Awards boycott. So Lecrae, obviously a very notable Christian rapper, took to YouTube to explain why he joined Kirk Franklin's boycott of the Christian Music Awards show. Franklin says that the show edited his comments about racial justice on two different occasions. According to Lecrae, the editing was part of a pattern of censorship at the Dove Awards. Here's a clip.
But what ended up happening was Kirk gave his acceptance speech after he won his award, well-deserved. And in his speech, asked for us to pray for the family of Tatiana Jefferson, the family of the officer who murdered her, and also her 8-year-old nephew who watched his auntie killed. And she was completely innocent. And so that prayer, that call to prayer, was edited out of his acceptance speech when it aired live. Very disappointing, especially because what better place than to ask for a call to prayer? What better opportunity to talk about, you know, issues that God cares about than this Christian platform? And so that was frustrating. But to add more insult to injury, his comments in years prior, as it involved issues of injustice, were edited out. To add more to that, artists that I know and love and care about have had performances where areas of injustice that were displayed in their performance was edited out. So, as you can understand, it was all quite frustrating, and so, you know, it rose some concerns. And Kirk and I have had some great offline conversations about this, and I was expecting something different. I was hoping to see more than this from GMA Dove Awards. But that being said, I support my brother Kirk, and until we can sit down and have a conversation about these particular issues, I won't be able to participate either. Mm.
Yeah, we talked about this briefly last week, but it is interesting to hear kind of Lecrae unpack it more and kind of demonstrate that this is a pattern at the Dove Awards. But at least the officials from GMA, you know, they seem to be interested in trying to figure out a way to kind of reconcile the situation. So we'll kind of see how that plays out.
Have they said anything? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so
there was a statement.
Yeah, they and it was apologetic. To a degree, they kind of just said, well, we edited a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff's for time. But they did say this is something they're interested in correcting. Mm-hmm. And they've been kind of contacting Kirk's, Franklin's team. But they haven't kind of outlined steps. But, you know, hopefully there's an opportunity for correction and redemption here. It's just a difficult situation, but I think it's cool to see someone like Lecrae, who, you know, I feel like actually probably monetarily has a lot to lose by disassociating himself with the Dove Awards and GMA, you know, take a stand. So hopefully it leads to some real change.
Yeah, I'm happy. I think anything that is, you know, anything that's kind of, not to sound too Christianese, but brought to the light always can work out for the better of everybody.
Yeah.
And I hope that this does for them, for sure, work out for the better for them, for everybody.
Yeah.
What would be interesting for me to see, because there in the statement released by the GMAs, there was sort of, like you said, Jesse, this implication that we edited a lot of things for time. Just happened to be that this time these comments about police brutality got edited out these two times for Lecrae, for Kirk first, and now for Lecrae to join in and say this was not an accident, but this is part of an ongoing sort of systemic issue. Then I think that would be what I would like to hear them respond to that charge in particular, because of course we edit stuff out all the time here, and a lot of it's, we leave good stuff on the cutting room floor sometimes because we just don't, because of obvious time constraints. But but I'm not sure. But if the system is, if it's true that there's a systemic issue or an ongoing issue here, then that's something I'd really like to hear the GMA's address. And yeah. I think that having Lecrae, arguably one of the top two or three biggest Christian artists working right now, boycott the Doves, that will force a real conversation. And, yeah. and obviously it has.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you said, that, you know, Lecrae could have a lot to lose here. I also think that the GMA has a lot to lose here,
sure,
too,
no,
by
sure.
Lecrae saying, sure. hey, I'm distancing myself. And so the pressure is on for them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, coming in at number one this week, a new version of A League of Their Own will tackle contemporary social issues. All right, coming back to baseball. So, according to The Hollywood Reporter, The Good Place's Darcy Carden is currently in talks to star in a reboot alongside Broad City's Abby Jacobson, who is also writing and executive producing. The pilot is being developed by Amazon and is based on the 1992 hit comedy about an all-American girls professional baseball league. According to the report, the half-hour comedy series is a modern look at the league, and even though it is set in the 1940s, it will feature road trips across a rapidly changing United States. The series dives deeper into the issues facing the country while following a ragtag team of women figuring themselves out while fighting to realize their dreams of playing professional baseball.
First of all, can I say I love this movie, the original movie.
Okay. All right. That's important to know. That. So we're talking to a real fan here.
Yes. I love that movie so much. And so I have not heard this. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, it gets nervous sometimes when you're remaking something.
Sure.
You're like, can't we just let this be?
Yeah. And that's true. But I don't you feel like out of like all of the of those, like, okay, like, let it be, you don't want to tarnish the memory of how great the original A League of Their Own was, but do you only feel like kind of bringing it back in TV show form instead of just doing like a new version of the movie, like, kind of leaves the original, you know, in its place? And especially because they're kind of getting these kind of interesting young talents, you know, involved, but also it seems to be sort of high-minded. Does that make you more nervous or less nervous about it, Jamie?
Well, I don't know, because as long as it's good. I mean, I guess we can say that about anything. As long as you don't mess it up, we're going to be fans. But you mess it up, we're not fans anymore. I don't know. All I know is I love the movie so much, and it's just this classic that everybody should have to watch. You guys have seen it, right?
Of course. Fantastic.
I have seen it.
Okay.
Yeah.
JD, it looked like you were shaking your head while I was reading this new, look at my a visual slice here. It looks like you were were you shaking your head in disappointment or trepidation, maybe?
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. I think part of it is like, I feel the same way, like that original film is so great.
Untouchable.
It's so good. Tom Hanks's performance is just like spot on. And then like Gina Davis and I mean, even Madonna's weird cameo role she has in there. It's like, it's all like pitch perfect. And I just feel pitch perfect. See? But it's so perfect. It's such a great classic.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed though to them retelling a deeper version of that historical moment when all of a sudden women stepped in and fulfilled what was traditionally a masculine sport in America. And even though it was first met with ridicule, how it actually really in some ways brought like healing to the country in more ways than one. And I think that that's a great story worth telling. And I think TV, like an episodic version of that could serve that well.
Yeah.
Part of it just feels like,
agreed.
Part of it feels like a very studio thing to name it A League of Their Own just to piggyback on the success of the film. Whereas like, just tell that story, but why rope that name back into it?
I agree. You could tell about the moment again without necessarily needing it to be a remake of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's based on. But I do feel like in kind of the contemporary world of like IP of like intellectual property, it's important to kind of tie it back to a known entity. But also, Abby Jacobson, I think, is brilliant.
And I love Abby Jacobson. I love Broad City. And that's the most intriguing part of the whole thing right now to me is Jacobson's involvement, because she's such a good talent.
And from what I read, she went to the original creators of the movie and got their blessing before kind of acquiring the IP. They wanted to make sure it was cool with them. So it sounds like they're doing the right step. So I'm excited for it. And Jamie, you sound reasonably excited for it too, right?
I will be excited for it, yes.
I'm curious. Cool. I wonder if they would, like, and maybe this is what they're doing. Probably not. I wonder if they, like, it would probably, this is one of those silly things where, like, they don't have to do this at all, but it would help me out. If they just followed a different team. Like, if they weren't following, like, what was it, the Rockford Peaches or something? Like, if they weren't following them, if they were just a different one, then
that's
I could have...
That's an oddly specific request for them.
James. It is! But it's like, it keeps, it preserves that movie. Like, okay, that's their story. Now let's follow, like, I don't know any of the other team names. Let's follow, like, with one of the other teams and one of their other things. Because the second you start to put someone else in that, like, Geena Davis role, you're going to be, like, judging her against Geena Davis. Or, like, who else is going to play that... that character, except for Tom Hanks. The second that they try to do the new version of There's No Crying in Baseball, everyone's going to be like, sorry, you're not Tom. Like, it's just going to be too tough.
I trust him. I'm here for it.
I think we can all agree that the only person who could possibly fill those shoes at this point would be Woody Harrelson. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for this week's We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mark Batterson joins us. You're listening to Sad Day by FKA Twigs. Well, today's interview is brought to you by Native. Native creates safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Not convinced? Check out the 9,000 five-star reviews from their customers. Their products are formulated without aluminum, parabens, and talc, and are filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, tapioca starch. Plus, never tests on animals. And Native offers free shipping and returns, and it works. Making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on product performance. The eucalyptus and mint kept us smelling fresh all day. That's why they've been featured on outlets including The Today Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, Refinery 29, and others. Less is more with Native. Their formula contains simple ingredients you understand, so you know everything that's in their deodorant. Native comes in a wide variety of enticing scents for men and women. Plus, they release new limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year. They also offer an unscented formula and baking soda free formula for those with sensitivities. Classic deodorant scents include coconut and vanilla. It's the most popular scent. Lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and eucalyptus and mint. There's no risk to try because Native offers free returns and exchanges in the USA. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com. And use the promo code RELEVANT during checkout. One more time, that's 20% off your first purchase, nativedeodorant.com, and use the promo code RELEVANT during checkout. Well, Mark Batterson, of course, is the pastor of Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church. And in his new book, Double Blessing, How to Get It, How to Give It, Mark looks at why the idea of generosity is so life-changing. We recently talked with Mark about the book, How to Bless People Around Us Every Day, and what it's like to live in service to others in a modern eye-for-an-eye culture. Jesse, you handled this conversation. How'd it go?
Yeah, I was really excited to talk to him because I feel like the message of the book is not what I expected, not what you expect from a book called Double Blessing, because you would think like, oh, well, this is how to like, you know, receive more. But that's not really what he means by double blessing. What he means essentially is like anything that we receive in life should actually be used to bless others with. And we talked about how that's kind of a countercultural idea in an era, especially when you have people in high positions of leadership talking about quid pro quo and eye for an eye. And I'm not talking about anyone in particular. I mean, who could this be referencing? But I wanted to ask Mark, because I mean, obviously church is in DC, about, you know, why this idea seems so countercultural. And here's what he said.
Well, I think it's we live very much in a tit for tat, eye for an eye kind of culture. And so much of what Jesus taught was counterintuitive and countercultural. You know, pray for those who persecute you. Love your enemies. I don't think we're very good at that in our current cultural context. At the heart of that is this idea of leading with blessing. And what's fascinating to me is Jesus says, when you enter a home, give it your blessing. And if it's not deserving, the blessing will return to you. I think we do the exact opposite. We assess whether we do a quick assessment, try to discern whether someone is worthy of our blessing or not. And then and only then do we give it. But that is not the way that Jesus modeled. I think this idea of leading with blessing, it's a game changer. And I would even say this, that as a pastor of a church in the nation's capital, we're not just trying to build a church. We're trying to bless a city. And when you lead with blessing, I think it is the game changer. People are now open to hear what you have to say.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. It's like, oh, wait, we should live a lifestyle and just give people the benefit of the doubt and be gracious and kind to people and bless people no matter what, no matter if we get anything in return or not. Yeah, it definitely is like an interesting idea. But he also, you know, he throughout the interview, he talked about how blessing, obviously, there's like monetary implications. Like, we should be generous. We should tithe. We should support people financially when we can. We should live our lifestyle in a way where we have margin to give. But he also said it's not just about money. There's lots of ways that we can be generous in our day-to-day life. And here's how Mark described that.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, it's important to think in terms of time, talent, and treasure. And so when we think generosity, we tend to think money, but that's a thin slice of the pie. In fact, the hardest thing for me to be generous with is my time. And so there are so many ways to lead with blessing. And why don't we start with a simple smile? I mean, it's crazy, but a smile is a way of blessing someone else. I think in our culture, undivided attention, especially when we are so distracted by social media, really listening to someone, not to formulate an answer, but to really understand the way that they think. Those are simple ways that we can lead with blessing. And I think it starts with a mindset that how can I add value to every single person that I meet, whether it's a kind word or just going out of my way to somehow bless them in a practical way. And, you know, I'll occasionally leave a tip that's a little bit larger than normal, or I'll pay for the person behind me. Those aren't big things, but those little things make a big difference.
Yeah, I like that idea so much of just looking for opportunities to be like a good person. The other thing of what I feel like he said that's interesting there, it reminded me of the conversation we had with Malcolm Gladwell in the most recent cover story. I think we played the clips on the pod where he was talking about how first and foremost, Jesus in his interactions with people was a fantastic listener. Like, everyone he ran across felt listened to. Like, he wasn't out there. Yes, Jesus was a teacher and a preacher, but he was also a great listener. And I love that idea of like one way that you can like bless others, one way that you can demonstrate to others that you care about them, like God cares about them, is just taking time to listen. It's to give them undivided attention without, you know, hey, I got to run to be at this place, but hey, you doing okay? All right, good to see you. You know, like, no, how are you? It's like, you know, there was an interview a few weeks ago with Meghan Merkel, who is the Duchess of Sussex. Is that her official title?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And, you know, the interviewer kind of casually just said, well, how are you? And you could see like tears almost well up in her eyes and say, you know, no one ever asked me how I am. How am I doing? And I think what Mark Batterson is saying kind of in this book and in the interview is like, man, you have no idea how what that kind of degree of attention can have on somebody. And we kind of transition to talk about, well, you know, he writes in the book about a lot about quote unquote, like life giving words, not just encouragement, but what it actually means to kind of speak life into someone in this context when you're trying to bless them. And here's what his recommendations were to like making this a part of your lifestyle.
This goes way beyond just even the idea of niceness. Now, listen, niceness would be a good starting point, I think, for a lot of people. But I think to me, this is the idea that we are part of a royal priesthood. If I'm reading 1 Peter chapter 2 right, we are all priests. And what that means is there's this wonderful priestly blessing. May the Lord bless you and keep you, make his face shine on you, be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his countenance towards you and give you peace. I bet there are a lot of people that those words ring a bell because they're often pronounced at the end of a church service. They're this ancient priestly blessing. And most of us are on the receiving end of some pastor or priest pronouncing that blessing. I would suggest that no matter what you do, whether you're a lawyer or a teacher or an Uber driver, no, you are a lawyer priest. You are a teacher priest. You are an Uber priest. Your job is to bring blessing to people's lives. And I think that's often speaking spirit-inspired words. In other words, let's ask God for discernment and speak things into people's lives that actually are life-giving.
Yeah, that's such a, I feel like, important concept. And, you know, I asked him personally how incorporating this attitude and these behaviors has affected his personal life and what effects it can have. And here's what Mark Batterson said.
Up front, I probably should say that God doesn't bless us to raise our standard of living, blesses us to raise our standard of giving. And, you know, what I've found is that joy is found on the giving side of life. And so the secret to the double blessing, it's a little counterintuitive, but the way you get it is by giving it. And so we are literally blessed to bless. And I think it starts with being really good at gratitude and this idea of taking inventory of how we've been blessed. If we don't count our blessings, we discount our blessings. And so it starts there. But then my wife and I live by this little idea of flip the blessing. And so we take good notes on when and how and where we've been blessed. And then we try to flip that blessing for other people. And that really is where the greatest joy is found. You know, Jesus said it this way, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And we've certainly found that to be true.
Yeah, that is, I think, just such a good reminder. I think it's kind of something we've all been taught, but it's like, man, it really is important. Like, this is what it's all about.
It's one of those, yeah, it's one of those things where you can, no matter how many times you hear it, you can't hear it enough because we don't do it. You know, this feels like basic stuff, but there's a reason that people put these little reminders around them or that we try to encourage people to go back to reread these lessons, whether it's from the Bible or hear about them in sermons from teachers or that our parents had to tell us, you know, you've got to do this and it's not our natural inclination. So words like this really help a lot.
Yeah. Well, everyone should check out his book. It's called Double Blessing and it just came out.
And I appreciate Mark Batterson joining us. Thanks a lot, Mark. Next up, Ask the Cast. You're listening to Apale by Rosalia. Okay, it's time for, I love this segment, it's time for Ask the Cast. This is where we ask you over Twitter to come at us with some questions that you have for the cast, and we come back with our answers. Here are a few of the most interesting questions that we pulled out of the lineup this week. First up, from Spencer. What can I do to find friends as a new student at a giant college with a ton of people? Oh, it's a tough one. What do you guys think?
I think my first piece of advice would be to find the squarest person there and ask them to mentor you in writing sermons. It seems to have worked out pretty well for two people who tried this for. One's a famous actor. One is a vice president of the United States. So, Spencer, I would get sermon writing. What are your guys' advice for Spencer?
First of all, Spencer, you guys, I could just close my eyes. I remember going back to college my freshman year where my parents left my dorm and I did not know a single soul. And I could start crying right now. It was so sad scary. So it's Spencer, tough. I understand. I'm like the empathetic one over here. I guess my advice, I don't know, join a club. I don't know what you do to...
Tennis club. Get out there.
Go play some tennis.
I hope your elbow's okay, but I would get on that tennis club, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it is scary. I remember that same experience, Jamie, not knowing anyone and just like going to my dorm and be like, okay,
it's the worst.
This is what's happening now. Yeah, I would say just be, I mean, Spencer, the other thing too, and I'm sure you guys can all relate to this, there's terror and like also freedom for it to be like, I can literally be anyone I want right now and nobody knows. Nobody knows. No one grew up with me.
You can clear out yourself entirely. You could be anybody.
I could start speaking with a British accent here and no one's going to question me. Like all of a sudden, I'm the interesting English guy, even though I've never even been in
England. Right.
Spencer, this is the time to create your own, whoever you ever wanted to be, now is the time, friend. Make that dream a reality. You can be whoever and no one's going to question anything. That's my advice, Spencer.
That's exactly right.
But here comes the mom. I'm going to be the mom because I'm old enough to be Spencer's mom, I would imagine. Okay. Spencer, make sure you find good friends, okay?
Spencer, How do you know they're way more fun? The bad kids are more fun.
You'll have more fun. You'll have more fun, Spencer.
If you're going to go on the spectrum between Mike Pence and Woody Harrelson, I'd go closer to Woody. If I were you, Spencer,
you'll have plenty of time to be friends with Mike Pence's down the road. Right now, you want to be friends with Woody Harrelson.
I got news for you, Spencer. Adult life is full of boring Mike Pence's. College is the time to hang out with those Woody Harrelson characters.
All right. So Paul says, I'm from Canada, so I can't possibly know this. So tell me how to properly pronounce this word. Is it program or program?
What?
I don't know. I don't know what he's talking
Canada,
about.
Do they not have programs? Where in the world, Paul, are they saying program?
program sounds like,
so watching like
program, like program's progress. Like it's who settled America.
I could see it like on the BBC. They're saying on the next program, like they just say it. Wow.
When I was in college for those 4 years, I spoke with the British accent. I did say, do you have the latest program?
Your name was, it went by Archibald Leeds to everybody.
Esquire. For some reason, I acted like I had a law degree too. Yeah.
Archibald Leeds Esquire.
Yeah.
Time to get with the program, mates. It's program.
That was very popular. Program in the US. I was very popular in the Mike Pence circles in college, if you know what I mean. They're very impressed with the British accent, that growl.
Here's a terrible idea. Alex says, my mom keeps calling me with iPhone tech questions. Can I direct those calls to you? Yes, but I don't get to tell your mom this, but the advice we give her is going to be disastrous. intentionally, we are going to make her wish that she was still talking to you, her number one son.
Absolutely. Parent tech questions are literally the absolute worst. For some reason, it's any person over a certain age when they're asking someone younger than them a tech question. For some reason, their frustration with the technology is directed at you. Right. It's like, I don't know, Uncle Ted. I did not design the interface of your cable box. So the hostility that I'm feeling that you don't know how to watch that DVR show shouldn't be directed at me here. I'm trying to help. Don't kill the messenger. Is that your guys' experience too? The frustration is directed at the helper.
Yes,
but I'm in the middle, you guys, because I'm helping my parents with stuff, but then I'm asking my kids to help me with stuff. Yeah, sure. And so, you know, I'm like, 15-year-old, get over here. How do I find this on my phone? And they're like, okay, mom, let me show you. So I'm living both lives.
Sometimes
here.
When I buy like a new thing, I will give my parents like the last version of it so they can have it. And I did that with my like surround sound system in my house. And so I gave them the old one, and my dad was all excited about it. And he calls me up last week, and he's calling me up all frustrated. And he's like, I can't get your stupid machine to work. And I was like, oh no, like what's wrong, dad?
Did he
and
say,
he's
dad, like, the one I gave you for free, which I did not invent or create.
Right. Yeah. Right, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And he's like, well, every time I try to watch a DVD on it, like it comes up and it plays, but the little symbol on the bottom says Xbox on it.
Do you want to explain? You want to explain that to me? And it's like, no. Why are you yelling? Like,
I will say that there's now. It's kind of we're getting to the point where it's happening reverse for me now, because I'm going over, and this is going to happen. I'm going over to my in-laws for Thanksgiving here in a couple of weeks, and now I feel like we're getting to the point where a lot of like boomers have their own. They figured out their system.
Yes.
So like, oh, man, if I'm going to want to watch a movie, like, so
I like, get on the TV, like I want to watch a movie
or something, and they've got like the 5 remote controls set up and the 15 different receivers for it, and I'm like, I don't know how to begin. This might as well be an abacus. Like, what are even are these things? And my father-in-law come down and, oh, I'll tell you what you gotta do. You gotta press, and it's some sort of like Mark Zuckerberg level algorithm of all the different buttons you have to push to get it onto the right remotes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, now we're out of the fuse box. Now flick it twice. Yeah.
Did you click it 3 times? You clicked it 3 times.
The other old person tech move, if it's a touch screen, it's like, well, if it's not working, obviously if I tap it harder and faster, yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm tapping. You can see I'm tapping as hard as I can here, as fast as I can.
I will say the opposite thing happens though too, because like there's that weird thing where like the pendulum swings to the other side, and I'll go over to my in-law's house, and he's got his Google Homes program to do like literally everything in the house, and then he doesn't understand I still use like my hands for things. Like I'll turn the light on. I was like, what? Why'd you do that? Just tell Google. Google, turn on the lights. Now the lights are all screwed up because you used the switch. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was not allowed to use the switch. Like, what? You didn't flush that toilet with your hands, did you? Just tell Google. Like, Google, flush my toilet.
I was at an office the other day, and I won't reveal the, I don't want to give too much away, but it made me question the competence of this particular place, because the person I was sitting there like, hold on, I have it in my email. Let me pull it up here. And they went to like Yahoo and searched for their email.
Oh, no.
And then they, you know, like the web browser brought up Gmail. It's like, okay, here it is. And I'm like, okay, this is cause for concern here. Like, I feel like we should be beyond just socially, you know, using a search engine to find your email. Like it's just, and there's a lot of gaps here. So Alex, for your mom's iPhone tech questions, I would act like every time she calls you, presumably on the iPhone, say, mom, I can't hear you. Something's wrong with your phone. Mom, I can't hear you. That won't get her frustrated at all.
Yeah.
There you go. She'll blame the
phone.
That'll
work great.
Yeah. Well, hey, I think that's going to do it for us, everybody. Many thanks to Mark Batterson for joining us today. Double Blessing is out now. Also, I want to say thank you to Native. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com. Use the promo code RELEVANT during checkout. That's nativedeodorant.com, promo code RELEVANT. Also, make sure if you're listening to this podcast, you want to check out Relevant Daily, too. Relevant Daily is our daily, Monday through Friday, look back at the biggest stories at the intersection of faith and culture of the day. You also want to check out Called, our podcast for church leaders, featuring great conversations with some really interesting people who are helping take the church into the future. You guys just had a conversation with N.T. Wright, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It's a really good one, worth checking out. It's a exciting podcast. I love that Relevant's been able to help bring that one together a little bit. And with that, I think it'll wrap it up. I'm Tyler Huckabee.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm John David Harris.
I'm Clark Flippo.
We'll see you next time. Have a great weekend, everybody.
And I guess this is what they mean when they say people can change. 'Cause I finally feel free. I feel like myself again.
Thank you for listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
But sometimes she don't listen to me, and it makes me want to lose my mind like you used to. I try to blame it all on you, but I know that I'm to blame.
Spencer, go with the bad kids. They're way more fun.
Relevant Podcast Network.